Several years ago, George Barna asked a group of Americans, if you could ask God one question and know that you would receive an answer, what would you ask? The most popular response was this. They would want to ask God, why is there pain and suffering in the world? Why is there pain and suffering in the world? C.S. Lewis remarked that the problem of suffering is atheism's greatest weapon against the Christian faith. But it's a tough question, a hard question, but deserves to be asked. And at some point, we have to go to God with these struggles, with these hard questions, and really seek out the answers. And so that brings us back to Habakkuk. And we're studying this theme, trusting God when you don't understand Him. And that's what Habakkuk learns to do. Here's a simple outline that I shared with you last Sunday night. Chapter 1, faith tested. We'll be looking at the latter part of chapter 1 this evening. Chapter 2, faith taught. There's a message from God to Habakkuk in his questions. In chapter 3, faith triumphant. That's where he'll end up. And when we study this book, we'll see a change that takes place in Habakkuk. From fear to faith. From burden to blessing, from perplexity to praise, from confusion to confidence, and from worry to worship. But here's the main dilemma that Habakkuk is struggling with. It's the fact that God would use a nation like Babylon to punish Judah, God's people. God, how can you do this? Is basically Habakkuk's question. You see, the issue is not so much Judah and her sin. I believe Habakkuk acknowledges that. The issue is not Babylon and how evil it is. The issue is not really Habakkuk's doubts. The issue is with God. And Habakkuk is asking God, how can you do this? It just didn't fit with what he understood about God. And so in the latter part of chapter 1, we find three questions that Habakkuk asks of God. And here's the first one. God, who are you? Who are you? Notice verse 12 with me of Habakkuk 1. O Lord, are you not from everlasting? My God, my Holy One, we will not die. O Lord, you have appointed them to execute judgment. O Rock, you have ordained them to punish. And I believe Habakkuk is crying out. This is really a cry to God. Still wondering, how could you do this? Habakkuk recognizes, just as we must, that either when God doesn't make sense, we either walk away from our faith or we seek to remind us of who God is. So Habakkuk is acknowledging God from what he knows about God. He says, you are the everlasting God. You are Lord. You're the personal God of Israel. You are God, meaning the strong one, the creator, the majestic ruler. You're holy. You're in a class all by yourself, and you are our rock. You're the only safe place. And Habakkuk seems to be reminding himself of these things that he's learned about God as he questions, how could God use Babylon, a nation much worse than Judah, to punish Judah? Habakkuk's question is not, do I believe in God? It's more, what do I believe about God? Or what is God doing? Again, he's having trouble reconciling what he believes about God with what God is doing. And many times we experience the same struggle. I read about a preacher who wrote about the time that he received a call-in question during a radio interview. The very first call came from a man who was burdened with many cares. And he asked this preacher on the radio, he says, how can you be so confident about your answers, about his answers regarding God and his will for our lives? The preacher responded, well, that's a fair question. He told him that he first came face to face with the unanswerable questions of life when his own father had died very suddenly when he was 22 years old. 3 months earlier, the preacher says, his father had been the best man at his wedding. Somehow he came down with an infection the doctors couldn't treat, and he died after spending just a few days in the hospital. The preacher writes, "As I write these words, 40 years have passed since Dad left us. As I reflect on my life, I realize I've learned a great deal in the 4 decades since then. I think I have a better understanding of God now. But if I'm being honest, I can say that I don't know anything more about why my dad died than I did the day he passed away in a hospital in Birmingham, Alabama. It was a mystery then, and it remains a mystery now. I don't know why such a good man would have to die at the young age of 56, leaving my mother and her 4 sons without a husband and father. It doesn't make any more sense to me now than it did then. But I have learned," and notice his words, "faith is a choice you make. Sometimes you choose to believe because of what you see. Often you believe in spite of what you see." I thought those were very profound words from someone who had asked those unanswerable questions and yet was making the choice to believe. Because if there is no God, then nothing at all makes sense. I've chosen to believe in God and believe God, not because of that I can explain everything that happens, because I can't, but because there is no other viable option. I know enough about God as He's revealed Himself through His Word, that He loves us, that He cares for us, that He gave His Son to save us, that He wants us to live eternally with Him in heaven. And I also know that God is looking for faith. And sometimes that means that we trust Him, even when we don't understand Him. Even when we can't understand completely what He's allowing to happen. So perhaps we need to do what Habakkuk is doing here in reminding himself of who God is. We need to remind ourselves that God is good, He's holy, He's just, that He knows all things, that God is love, that He makes no mistakes, that His Word is true, that He sent His Son, that Jesus is the Son of God, that He died on the cross, He rose from the dead, that Jesus ascended into heaven, and one day He's coming back. And that His Spirit dwells in His children, that God is always with us, that all things work together for our good and for God's glory, and that God will complete His work in us. And as we review those things that we know about God from His Word, then our faith is built. And Habakkuk is working through these issues, asking God these hard questions like, "Who are you, God?" And he's reminding himself of what he knows about God. And then he asks a second question. How can you do this? I've quoted Habakkuk 1:13, speaking about the nature of God, but look at it in its context. Habakkuk says, "Your eyes are too pure to look on evil. You cannot tolerate wrong." And I've used that passage to speak to the holiness of God, and He is holy. But notice why Habakkuk is pointing out this fact about the holiness of God. Because he asks this question, "Why then do you tolerate the treacherous? Why are you silent when the wicked swallow up these more righteous than themselves?" And he has reference to Babylon. If you are so holy, if you're so pure, you can't even look on evil, if you can't tolerate wrong, why are you tolerating the treacherous people of Babylon? That fierce army under Nebuchadnezzar that was wiping out people, overtaking whomever they wanted in a very fierce way. And here's the heart of the problem. This seeming injustice, this moral inequity. Someone noted some people seem to have it easy, while others suffer for years. And none of us can deny that observation. We may quote Longfellow in his poem and say, "Into each life some rain must fall." But the fact is, some people get a sprinkle of trouble while others live with a torrential downpour. And we ask, how can that be? And there's no answer that we can give. We can't explain that. So that's Habakkuk's struggle here. what God is doing in using Babylon to punish Judah, a nation much more corrupt than Judah, he cannot comprehend that. It reminds us again that God's ways are not our ways, but God is using this nation to punish Judah. And with our questions that we have, the fact is we may not know the answer on this side of heaven. But what we're going to be confronted with is this, a reminder of this fundamental truth, that God is God and we're not. God is God and we're not. Maybe we don't have to understand everything that he does or that he allows. But here's another difficult question. How long will this last? Look with me in Habakkuk chapter 1. I want to read beginning with verse 14. Verse 14. Why do you make men like fish of the sea, like creeping things that have no ruler over them? They take up all of them with a hook, and they catch them in their net and gather them in their dragnet. Therefore they rejoice and are glad. Therefore they sacrifice to their net and burn incense to their dragnet, because by them their share is sumptuous and their food plenteous. Shall they therefore empty their net and continue to slay nations without pity? Again, the reference is to Babylon. And he likens Babylon to these fishermen that are just catching all the fish in their nets and their dragnets, and they're emptying them and then going out and catching more. And the fish are defenseless. Shall Babylon continue to empty their net and continue to slay nations without pity? That's his question. How long are you going to allow Babylon to continue to do this? Habakkuk is wondering, God, when is this going to end? How long is this going to last? You see, most people can stand up under trouble if they know that it'll eventually come to an end. I've quoted Ernie Smith many times. I remember he was about to have some surgery years ago. And he was told that even after the surgery that he would be in some pain. But that after about a 24-hour period, that pain would ease and he would feel much better. And after the doctor left the room, I remember saying to Brother Ernie, I said, "Brother Ernie, I'm sorry that's what you have to look forward to." And his response was this. He said, "David, I can endure anything for a day. I can endure anything for a day." In other words, if I know that I'm going to hurt for a day, but after that day it's going to get better, I can endure that. I can endure anything for a day. And if we know that the hurting is going to come to an end, it can help us endure today. So Habakkuk is asking, how long will this last? So there are his questions. Who are you, Lord? How can you do this? How long will this last? Habakkuk is a very honest man. And he goes to God with his tough questions. And he's confident in God. But he's confused by what God is doing in the world. So he has this boldness to ask God these tough questions. He could answer the first one partly, but not the last two. So he makes a decision. This brings us into chapter 2 and verse 1. I will stand at my watch and station myself on the ramparts. I will look to see what he, God, will say to me and what answer I am to give to this complaint. What's his decision? Some translations use the phrase watchtower or guard post. I will stand at my watch and station myself on the guard post, this watchtower. And what is he doing? He's waiting on God to answer his questions. He has that faith enough. He's asked God some questions. He doesn't understand. And so now he's going to wait for God's answer. He still doesn't understand how God can use the wicked Babylonians to judge Judah for her sins. And it really doesn't make sense to him. But he knows that Judah has sinned and Judah has to be punished. He just doesn't understand how God could use Babylon. But he makes this decision, I will wait on the Lord. He's poured out his complaints before the Lord. Now he's waiting for God's answer. So what do you do when you've prayed to God and you don't like the answer you've received? You can try bargaining with him, but that doesn't work. You can get angry, but that doesn't help. You can ask God some questions. Habakkuk did. You can go back to reminding yourself of who God is as he's revealed himself in his word. That's what Habakkuk did. But most of all, you can decide to wait on the Lord in faith and hope and in the confidence that what doesn't make sense now will make sense later. For the moment, we're going to leave Habakkuk there on that watchtower waiting for the Lord's answer. But may that example remind us that sometimes we have to wait. And that's a very difficult thing to do. But as you wait, remember that God has not forgotten you. This isn't the end of the story, even for Habakkuk. Remember that God has you on his mind. He sees your confusion, your fear, your distress. Do not despair, but rest on this promise. Those who wait on the Lord shall renew their strength. They shall mount up with wings like eagles. They shall run and not be weary. They shall walk and not faint. God's assurance is that when we wait upon him, he'll give us the strength that we need. We'll come back to Habakkuk, Lord willing, next Sunday. But watch how his questions turn into faithful affirmations. As we leave him now at this point, having asked those questions, now waiting on God's response. I know we've all asked some hard questions, but may I remind us to be reminded of who God is, what we know about him, that he does love us, that he demonstrated that by giving his son to die for us, and that he's promised us an eternal home if we'll accept it on his terms. And it may be that there's someone that's ready to obey the gospel tonight, or there may be others who desire prayers on your behalf. If that's the case, won't you come right now as together we stand and sing.